looking for Bill Regan!
What's Hello, up? Everybody, and welcome back to another show of, what is this, Pre-Match Muti, brought to you by Go Lounge. We've got the usual suspects, Mosa, Nick, Wonga, and Silo. We have the Tottenham man missing. I think he's too afraid what's happening. I think he's focused on the Europa game tonight, but not Wonga. Wonga's got full faith in his team. That's why he's made an appearance here. He can talk about the weekend's predictions, knowing that he's got full confidence in his team. Hey, Wonga.
No, I do. I see that Aubameyang is not playing as well. But yeah, definitely, I've got faith in Nketiah, the young man. He's hungry for goals.
Maybe one goal.
As long as you win.
Yeah, so what we're going to do is we're going to kick off with the Wolves-Newcastle game just because we know that one of the sides are busy in Europe this week and the other isn't. So they've had a lot of time to prepare. So, Nick, what are the preparations happening there in Newcastle at the moment for this weekend's game?
Wait, Wolves not in Europe, eh?
Oh, well, thank you, Silo. I was just making sure you're awake.
I would have been happy if they were, but... I think I was actually chatting to my old man a few minutes ago, and there was a blog, NUFC blog, actually did a poll with 15,000 fans, and I think there was a 95% percent of the fans that actually want Steve Bruce out. They think that he's taken us to as far as he can actually take us, because, I mean, you know, if you look at us on paper, we probably are a mid-table, maybe just in the top half, if we're lucky, with the squad players that we have, but they're just not being coached properly. So I'm a little bit concerned this weekend. I do think Wolves, I watched them against Leeds on Monday night. They looked the real deal. I mean, Traore was on the bench. And I mean, if he can't even get a start there, that just shows you what sort of depth they've got. They move the ball really well. They've got willing runners. They defend as a team. I think a lot of people have been speaking about Connor Cody and what sort of defender he's become. And I wouldn't be surprised if one of the big four, big six come in for him pretty soon, because I think he's got them defensively sound, Patricio at the back, and then they've got Jimenez up top. So I think it might be a bit of a long day for my team. But this is Newcastle United. Anything can happen. Anything can happen. We can rock up and we could probably surprise all of us. So, yeah, I'm not too sure.
Do you think the coach's job will hinge on these type of results?
I don't think so. I think Mike Ashley's got another yes man. He's a cheap option. He's got probably a contract, and he's happy to sort of stay in work, for lack of better words, and he's lucky because he's actually coaching the team he supports. I strongly believe that if he really supports a team, he should be seeing what sort of crap he's putting out on the weekend, and he should maybe step aside. Because if you're a true fan, you know, you can take your team as far as you want to, but then you're milking it, because then you're not actually doing it for the good of the club. I'm a little bit weary, but as I say to you, I think it's been like one win, one loss, one draw, one win, one loss. So it's very up and down with us. But it will be a long day against a really good Wolves team, I think.
Yeah, and I liked your comments about Connor Cody and seeing the centre-half he's become, because he actually started out as a centre-mid and he was never going to break into the first team at Liverpool because he came through the academy at the ranks there. But obviously we had the likes of Alonso and Gerrard at the time. So it's funny how he's reinvented himself as a ball-playing centre-half, which if he doesn't go to a big club, then I would be surprised, to be honest.
What they do mention quite often, a lot of the pundits, because obviously there's no fans at the moment, you can hear him. So I know Sky Sports have an option where you can turn off the fan sounds. I think we don't really have that option. But you can hear Connor Cody apparently for 90 minutes. He just does not shut up, and he's just organizing, making sure. And I actually heard this comment first when he actually played for England. and they said the whole of Wembley is echoing with Conor Cody's voice because he's just shepherding everyone. And you know, if I had to compare them in terms of a leadership, compare him with, and I'm going to have a go at not a go at him, but you compare him and Harry Maguire, it's like chalk and cheese. Maguire looks a little bit scared, a little bit nervous. He's confident in himself. He's loud. He's present. He's willing to get onto the ball. And it just shows you the difference between a player with loads of confidence and one who's probably a little bit depleted in that department.
Yeah, and it's one that's being backed as well by everyone. He feels the belief. He feels the support from the coach. Yeah. And he's built into that role because he came through the ranks or through the different leagues with Wolves and he's stuck in it. So he's very much part of the fabric now of the club in comparison to your Harry Maguire, who's had to come in and just be the big shoes as opposed to fall into the big shoes, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
that is an interesting point.
I mean, they beat a good team on Monday. I mean, Leeds have shown that they can mix it up with a big boy. So I think Wolves, I mean, we spoke on Tuesday night about teams that could potentially, this might be the year, the opportunity for maybe a random team again, another Leicester City to go on and go and do something. You know, you can't write off Wolves. Defensively look good. They've got a good goalkeeper. They've got good ball players in the midfield. They've got goals in them. They've got willing runners. They've got pace, power. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see them fighting for at least a top four. Why not? Especially with the inconsistent season that it's been. For my team, I think it might just be a matter of can we stay in the game? That's generally the plan. Can you stay in the game to 70 minutes? Maybe we've got a goal. We've got goals in Callum Wilson. We've got delivery with Fraser. We've got St. Maximin. We've got on our day, we've got some game changers, but it's just I don't think they're really being coached into a really we don't really have a tactic or a strategy of how we would play, because if it doesn't really work as plan A, plan B sort of falls away. So yeah, I think we hopefully get a draw, maybe a win. But I wouldn't be surprised if Wolves go on and dominate it.
Like you're ready to take the coach.
Yeah.
He's been asking.
How many years does he have left in his contract?
I don't even know. I think he signed a 3-year deal initially, so he must be two seasons left. But I mean, he's just there because of Ashley, and he's an easy deal to get over the line. It was a bit of a scramble. You lose Rafa Benitez. Oh, let's go get the savior, Steve Bruce, the guy with the most relegations, the guy with the worst win rate in the Premier League ever, because he needs a job, you know.
I will say this though, Nick. I will say this: if that Saudi deal had gone through, I would have loved to have seen. I don't think it would have happened, but Nuno Espirito Santo from Wolves be the man to take charge of Newcastle. I just feel like it's the perfect sort of club for a man like that.
100%. And I mean, I think Mourinho had just gone to Spurs. But if you follow Mourinho's story, Mourinho's got a love for Newcastle that I think not many people know up until recent times. But Sir Bobby Robson, who is a Geordie, and he obviously coached us, taught him everything he knew. And
parking the bus and all.
Yeah. I mean, he was a Geordie. What did he say?
He said parking the bus
and all.
Parking the bus. I think he's got I think Vyas Boas also worked under Sir Bobby Robson. So I think it is an attractive club if the project is right. St. Maximin said something quite interesting when he signed his new deal, that he is now ready and focused after discussing Newcastle's project and what they have planned for the next couple of years. If what anything,
before someone's, the deal got removed.
Someone's a good salesman there at Newcastle. That's what's going on.
There's one or two things. He's either been told that the deal might go through with either a Saudi or an American owner or something like that, or potentially he's just been sold dreams and Steve Bruce is all of a sudden going to become a good manager. And he's just really stupid. Or he's maybe just chased the money.
If he gets game time, you know, it's enough for the club will sell a player like that if he's done well 100%. Enough. The only thing is, like with the tactics of the club, he's not necessarily going to shine as much as he would if he went to another side, like a Sheffield or you know.
I think also that just drives his price up. So when we do sell him, if his contract's a bit bigger, you know, then his price just becomes a bit larger. True. But, you know, we'll just have to see. We've got a mediocre coach. We've got some mediocre players, but we've got game changers on their day. And I can see us scoring. I just don't see us keeping them out. I don't see us keeping a clean sheet. So we'll just have to hold thumbs and you never know. The Geordie luck might be on our side. So fingers crossed.
Well, for you, let's hope it's because you didn't get your birthday gift over the weekend. So let's hope it's a belated birthday gift this weekend. I doubt it very much, but let's hope so.
100%. Are we going to give predictions now? Do you want me to give my prediction?
No. Predictions at the end. Don't. You're getting too excited. You see, he's already wearing his heart on his sleeve. He's coming out brazen. You know what happened last week with the United prediction?
You're giving me time to think about it. You're giving me time to think about it.
Good. It sounds like a loss already, though.
I'll never say.
We're going to move over to the next game where both teams are participating as we speak in the Europa League, the Arsenal versus Leicester game. One team managed by Arteta, the other managed by Brendan Rodgers, both good managers. Obviously, you can say the one's got more experience in the form of Brendan Rodgers and a decent squad. So what do you guys think is going to happen with this? Let's start with Wonga because this is his team. What's happening in terms of injuries? What's happening? Obviously, there's the whole Ozil debacle that now is officially leaving the club. Where are you at with all of this?
Yeah, you see, with the Ozil one is a difficult one, eh? Because Ozil had that whole rant on Facebook. I'm sure everyone read it. Basically saying, if you just summarize it, it's just... I don't want to summarize it just for time's sake and not the significance of the post.
Actually find out what actually happened with Arsenal and Ozil, because that's a quality talent that the world should be seeing and witnessing more of, you know?
I think it started when he started making up comments, and I don't even think, but at this start, when he made comments about the Muslims and how the Chinese were oppressing them, basically. He made comments, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, he is a Muslim himself. And then he made comments about that. And then, if I remember correctly, it wasn't the board immediately, well, Arsenal, let's say, they separated themselves from Ozil's comments. You understand?
They're regarding the genocide. I don't know how to pronounce this. The Uyghur genocide. One of the many things he spoke up against.
Yes. And then when Ozil made comments about that, saying it's wrong, you know, Arsenal separated themselves from Ozil. Basically said those his comments are his comments. It doesn't reflect what the board is saying and what and all that stuff. And then I think from there, literally from there, everything went downhill. I mean, you didn't see him on the pitch. Everyone was, and I mean, his game performance after that, also on and off, but fact remains, I mean, you could see him and the club weren't one anymore, but he always wanted to fight for the club, as you were saying there. And true, he's been following what he's saying the whole time. He kept on saying that he's pushing for his place. But then after listening to Arteta as well now, he said, Arteta just spoke, I'm not sure if it was yesterday or today, but I saw it today myself, where he responded to what Ozil was saying. And he basically said that he gave Ozil, the right opportunity. I mean, the same opportunity as everyone else. He gave his he says that he can basically sleep with no troubles at night. It's not an easy decision, but he can sleep knowing that he's made the right decision. And I mean, based on merit, that's what Arteta is saying.
So that's interesting. Are you saying he? Because remember, when Arteta took over, Ozil was getting game time. Yes, so are you saying he's happy with the fact that he's not playing because Ozil wasn't as to the standard that he was expecting, or is that what you're saying?
That's what Arteta is saying. That is exactly what I'm not saying. I'm choosing a side. I'm choosing. That's why I say it's a difficult one. That's what Arteta is saying. So Ozil is saying he's tried his best. Arteta is saying that no, Ozil didn't qualify according to what we wanted.
But and you know, that's an interesting point, because if you're looking at Ozil isn't the type of player to fit, say, Jurgen Klopp's tactics or Arteta's tactics from that perspective. Mm-hmm. he's definitely not, he's not suited or geared up from that way. He's not going to work his ass off for like a 90-minute game. He's going to do it through spells. He's that creative guy who's going to float around. He's the type of guy I would hate to play with, by the way, but, you know, other guys enjoy. So, yeah, I can see why he said that.
Can,
but
in terms of, can I give you a bit of insight with – so there's actually a funny story, and I'll summarize it quickly, but one of the masseuses at Arsenal actually works for the Scottish FA. So I've actually met him when I've done my UEFA A license last year. And I asked him, because there was already tension before the beginning of the season last year. And I remember Ramsey left and there was questions as to why he wasn't given a contract. And I just asked, what's the deal there? I think Emery was still in charge. And Ozil staying and Ozil not being moved away from the squad or them selling him had to do with a board decision that included Adidas as their sponsor. Because he is the face of Adidas in Germany. And Adidas, if I'm not mistaken, is a German company. So in terms of him getting his big contract, in terms of them not offloading him, was more of a business decision rather than actually a footballing decision.
And, well, yeah, and 100% was. It was affecting the marketing perspective. Him coming out and saying the comments that he said was affecting the Asian market, the Middle East market. And they, I mean, you got to take into consideration when you're looking at Asia right now, it's a, what's the word I'm looking for? It's a growing market in a sense from a footballing perspective and the merchandise and the marketing. That's where a lot of funding is going towards. So for them to not be able, it's called a global audience. That's part of, we global fans. From this perspective, we global fans, obviously their interest in terms of coming to South Africa isn't great enough because let's face it, when we leave all our lights on during the day, we don't even affect global warming. That's how bad it is down here. But in Asia, you know, the foot traffic is immense. So if they didn't want to say anything, he said the one thing. Then it became very convenient to be like, well, he isn't as hardworking as the other players. He doesn't fit strategically or tactically. Ah, let's just dump this guy. So, yeah, but, so to your point, but
thing,
exactly.
But the thing is as well is that after he made the comments about the Muslims that were being affected in China, he continued to play. He was continually picked. But when they stopped picking him was... I think just before lockdown was obviously the last time he played. So, and during lockdown, what happened is that they asked the Arsenal players to take a pay cut. And he said, okay, what are you guys going to do with the money? Where's the money going to go to? And he was saying, no, I don't want to take a pay cut. And since then, he's never been seen. He was seen on the bench once with an umbrella where he made the I think he made the first squad lockdown. But since then, he's never been on the field. So obviously, it's the whole China issue and then the pay cut issue where he refused to take a pay cut. So those two issues together, you know, probably like, we need to make an example with this guy and just like cut him out.
And I agree. Yeah. And I see that that's true. I mean, you could see, anyone watching the events and seeing what happened, you could see that, leading to, Ozil's demise. But he also was staying positive as well. But like I say, it is a tough thing. If you're looking at like from Arsenal, I know many Arsenal fans are outraged, and Ozil is a good player. But the truth of the matter is, we don't see what's happening. I mean, I'd like to see. I mean, Ozil be training and stuff. And also, when Arteta's speaking as well now, he's not telling us when he says, you know, he's given opportunity. It's just on the face value. I'd really be interested to see. Like, what exactly does he mean by that he's been given opportunity? You know what I mean? Then it clarifies things for us on our side of when we talk about this. And another thing as well, just on the side note, I know it's not being focused on Arsenal, but I also was reading something about people who are of the opinion that the number 10 is sort of like, especially now in modern football, someone exactly like Ozil. He's not going to give you a defensive job. He's not a striker, but he can definitely help link up the midfield
and unlock defenders.
Yeah, but they're saying some people are of the opinion that modern football, that number 10 position is dying out, and people are trying to move away from that. Everyone in the team needs to work forward and back. That's what people are of opinion.
Yeah, case in point would be a Dele Alli who can't get game time at Spurs. Same sort
exactly.
of thing.
You see, they're good players. We see them, we like them, but they don't do the work. I mean, but then another one is if you look at. Thiago, he could play. I don't know what.
Hey, Marcus is in the house. Sorry, Wonga. What's up, Marcus?
Okay, keep going, Wonga. What up, Marcus?
Claude is a fan.
Claudio's biggest fan. But I hear what you're saying, Wonga. I think the thing is that the like each position, right? Over time, right? So the number 10 is developing, you know. you know, and number 10 now isn't just a passer of the ball or a goal scorer. He needs to also be do well defensively, you know what I mean? And then like a defensive mid is no more like the Makalele defensive mid. Needs to be a defensive mid, also pass the ball, you know, who can distribute, you know. I guess each position changes with the time, you know what I mean? You know, right backs now, they bomb down on the right wing, on the right left backs as well. So I guess every single position does change. But Ozil, still, man, I think he is a type of player that Arsenal still do need. That creative force is needed, man, because cool, who's creative in the Arsenal team? We can say Willian, we can say Ceballos, but then that's basically about it, because then the others are pretty much attackers.
I think with the jersey number 10, I think like what I've always learned or heard from people mentioning before is that generally world football follows the styles and the formations that the teams that win the World Cup portray. So you'll find like in maybe 10 years ago, you'd find Spanish football was at its helm, and you'd find that number 10 role would have been diminishing. You'd have a number 6 and an 8 like Iniesta and Xavi in there. And then afterwards, you'd find World Cup winners like Germany in the realm, where it's also kind of tricky to point out the number 10. Ozil was that kind of player for them, and that's why it is such a tricky thing as well. Whereas France won recently, and then you can't really signify where the number 10 is in that structure. So it's like it follows those type of, in my understanding of football, it follows those type of trends and flow of who's winning competitions and how do they form up and how do you then try and approach it in a sense. That's why Silo thinks Firmino is a defensive striker, because currently they play that like type of football, which is it wins a lot, and they don't have an out and out number 10.
And it speaks to Kane, for example, also changes his game to that sort of perspective, except he's offering more than what Bobby's doing at the time, because he's coming deeper and he's playing balls in behind. So it does, when you've got a striker or number 9 traditionally doing that in the game,
can I just address these guys? I'm wearing a Kaiser Chiefs shirt to show that the PSL
100% fair.
100% fair. I'm not gonna be. Yes, we beat PSG. You know, come on, man. You know, we always beat PSG. Come on, man. Come on, Marcus. We always beat PSG.
Come on. It's the first time we're in the competition with them.
We're coming back to this, though. I know you're getting a bit buttered, Archer. That's fair, because he's a confused guy. It's all right. We're talking about the Premier League. The guy brings out a PSL shirt. We don't know what's going on. But coming back to the whole number 10 thing. The number 10 role becoming redundant is to the fact that your traditional number 9 is offering more to that number 10 role than what a traditional number 10 is doing. But Wonga, just to get back onto to the railroads here in terms of the Leicester and Arsenal game, what do you think is going to happen between these two sides? You've got Vardy on the other end, and you've got an organized Arteta side. So do you think there's going to be enough there? Or how do you think this is all going to shake down?
Yo, Claudio, yes, you know, I'm always on the fence, but definitely I want my team to take this one. I think they can do it. Leicester, they can score their goals, but they also got their weaknesses at the back. I haven't looked at the stat, but I'm pretty sure Arsenal's conceded less than Leicester this start of the league. I think defensively you are doing a good job starting. For me, I think the I keep on forgetting about him is Martinelli. I know he's making his way back to recovery. I don't think he'll feature in this next game, but yeah, he's also one player. That, I mean, Arsenal, I mean, we sometimes think, I mean, up front, I think he's one player that I'd like to see. I would have liked to see in a match like this, because he's going to be, if I had him and Aubameyang, I think that would be. That would be a good strike force. I mean, put a lot of defenders under pressure. Martinelli loves doing that. And if he's got Aubameyang behind him as well, I think that's a good strike force for Arsenal. But yeah, I think defensively we'll be able to do the job against Leicester. Jamie Vardy, yeah, I mean, on his day, he'll just hit the ball. He'll close his eyes and hit the ball and it'll go in the back of the net, score amazing goals. But I honestly do think Arsenal has what it takes to win the game.
Is Vardy fit? Because obviously he didn't play the last game that Leicester played against Villa. So I'm wondering, and also their centre-back, Soyuncu, just got injured and he's out for 3 months. So they've got some injuries. Soyuncu, Didi's out. So I think obviously Arsenal will obviously, have already
an advantage.
Going into the game, where their best defensive minded players are not available. It'll be interesting to see if Vardy's available.
Yeah, is Aubameyang available?
But I'm also not too sure. He's not playing today, that's what I know.
Okay.
He's not playing today.
Yeah, and they're just for a score update for the Europa League. They're currently 0-0 at the moment at halftime, Arsenal.
Yeah, and I'm getting feedback. They're saying that they're playing horrible, but sadly, the players are there.
I watched like 10 minutes
of Arsenal again.
Europa League. But also what I've noticed as well is that, Arsenal, we've looked at them as during the ages, Arsenal as a high-scoring team, fluid-flowing football. I think that is there still. The fluid football is still there. But based on the results I've seen this season, I think it looks like they're just trying to get themselves organized and playing their way of their football. If they win 1-0, 2-0, that's fine. But it doesn't look like I wouldn't say they're free scoring.
No. I think this season and the next, towards the end of the last season and this season, it's all about getting the results for them, building their confidence, get back the winning attitude and winning culture back on board, and then they can start building from there. But, guys, Mateus is not here today, Matinho, because he broke a window at home playing soccer. And like I said, I think he used up his football token for the day, so he couldn't come on the show tonight. But Burnley Spurs, Matt, I'm going to throw this your way. You think Mourinho is going to bounce back after that result last week? You were talking about his psychology and addressing the players and not accepting what happened last week. Do you think that's going to filter through this week? And are they going to concede a goal this weekend?
So I don't. I think my name's not Matt. I'll correct you.
Remember who he is. who is that guy?
No, I was throwing it Nick's way. I said Matt wasn't.
you said Matt. But anyway, it's okay. I'll take this one. But
it's these generic English names, bro. Like Nick, Matt, John. I don't know. Like
he did this on Tuesday. He did this on Tuesday.
He did.
Like, I work better with like a Roberto, Firmino, Sergio. That's my sort of. Anyway, sorry. Okay.
I do think. We spoke about how Mourinho needed to sort out. I was quite vocal about the fact that I thought two of the goals were so avoidable in the sense that they just lacked like clear and obvious sort of clearances that just needed to be helped on into the other half. Instead, they were rashly headed or fouls given away where it was just given opportunities for West Ham to get back into the game. So I do think he'll address that. Musa and Claudio, you played under pressure games where, we used to have those training sessions where I think Coach Van used to say, never concede. And, it was such a victory for us not to concede those in those sessions because, if you're not conceding goals, and Mourinho said that already, if you don't concede, you're not going to lose. So that has been a problem for the last couple of I would say in Mourinho's reign, it's been a problem. Following his story there, he hasn't got the right formula right now at the back. And I think that's why we're starting to see a few changes. But he will definitely address it. Attacking-wise, they've got all the qualities. They've got so much depth. And if they can keep that squad fit, I would fear them as an opponent. But I genuinely think that they've got a chance to challenge this year. And challenge quite quite high up and maybe a top two, top three position. So this weekend will be very interesting. They play in a team that hasn't got off the mark yet. However, they're very hard to break down. They sit deep. Sean Dyche has them very organized. But their firepower should be enough to break them down. Are they able to not concede? Because what do the Burnley play off? They play off second balls. They play off set pieces. They're in your face. And if you're going to be nice guys, I think Mourinho said that. He's like, you guys are a bunch of nice guys. He said this last season to them. Oh, he says he wants a bunch of bastards. He says he needs a bunch of bastards out there. Yeah. So they need to play ugly when they need to play ugly. And it will be very interesting this weekend. I think they will have enough for Burnley. I think Burnley's course in the Premier League is coming to its end. And I think that it's a little bit evident already with their feeble performances. And I think they're very predictable. And their players are probably of the standard of a half-decent championship team. So I see Spurs coming out with a victory. I think Mourinho would have addressed everything he needed to. And if they don't, I would be worried then as a Spurs fan, because it's all good and proper going to score 3-4 goals a game. But if you're not keeping them out, you're not going to get the points required.
It'll be against his whole philosophy, in a sense. It'll go against Mourinho's whole approach.
Like 100%.
The type of coach that would win 1-0, 2-0, make it a very tough outing for his opponents before he concedes a loss.
Yeah.
But I think they have the firepower now. They have the firepower to actually put Burnley on the back foot. And at some point, it feels as if at some point in the game, if it happens early in the game where Burnley break defense and do concede, it will be an exhibition match for Tottenham. Because they'll have all that firepower to show. They have to show it all.
Yeah, true. I think it is interesting. I mean, they've got, like you've said, they've got all the firepower to go and actually be one of the best front threes or attacking fours in the Premier League. So you would think it's an easy task then. Just sort the back line out. Sort that block in front of the back four out. Sort your communication between your goalkeeper and your middle two. Two centre backs. So I mean, for me, I think Mourinho will get it right. I told you guys this in I think two episodes ago. I think he doesn't go anywhere without actually doing something and eventually winning something. So I think he will get it right. And I think he wouldn't have slept this whole week, knowing what he threw away last week.
He's come out with a tweet on his Instagram post saying, three goals we conceded against West Ham, the three amazing goals we scored against them, or the two Europa Leagues I have in my pocket, and the third one that I'm ready to fight for. So he's already thought about that, and he's like, screw this. This was just a blur on the radar, and I'm going to make it right. So he's already coming up with those sort of statements in typical Mourinho fashion.
Probably the best opponent to also get, to be fair. It's away from home, but it is the best opponent to get. At least they're not, you know, bouncing back from dropping those 3 points against a Man City or a Liverpool. He's got an opportunity to go rectify himself. I think Gareth Bale coming in can actually settle in. Whether or not they'll start that front three, I'm not too sure. He did look a little bit... he looked like he was huffing and puffing a bit after a couple of darts.
He's starting tonight. So I just saw a lineup. He's starting the front three with Lucas and the new striker Vinicius. So it will be how many minutes can he play?
What if he comes out of it and he does all right, I wouldn't be surprised if he goes with that front three.
With a Kane and a Son, though, you can't forget those two bad boys.
A Kane and a Son sounds like two weapons, boy. It's like the Kane. You've got the Kane in the one hand and you've got the Son. I don't know what the Son could be. Maybe like a ninja star.
I think it should be a comfortable one for them. And I think they will get back to their best. It'll be interesting to see if he makes any changes at the back. I think I had highlighted Sanchez and Aurier making two very unnecessary mistakes, just not clearing the ball and fouling in an area when the game's done. The player's facing his own goal.
He's got that in his game. Aurier's like, and that's why they were actually trying to replace him. They were trying to get rid of him. And for some reason, they didn't. I don't think they managed to bring anyone in. But it's because he has that moment where, yeah, they got him. I suppose they got him in. But what happened to Wise then? Aurier starting ahead, is Doherty to have an injury still?
I think especially in the last game, is that Doherty played 390 minutes for Northern Ireland in the international, whereas Aurier played, I think, like 1.5. So I think he was more fresh. And Aurier had a great game against Man United.
Yeah.
So that's the thing with Aurier, is that you don't know what you'll get on the day. You'll get like one of the best right backs ever, or get like a guy who makes errors, you know?
They tactically use Aurier. When they play Aurier, they use that sort of... Mourinho gives him freedom to play very close to the front three. And you normally find him, especially when the ball's developing on the one side, he finds himself in the box, for another cutback or for an opportunity to score, which he did recently. They don't necessarily do that on the other side. And it normally just sort of... It sort of mitigates his risk in terms of the transition. And they'll normally, just because of his pure pace, Aurier is so quick and powerful. And sometimes maybe probably better as like an attacking player. When he defends, he worries me a little bit because he bites in areas where he doesn't need to and gives away unnecessary fouls. But he's very effective going forward. He's technically very good. He's got a good strike on him, a good cross. And obviously...
I think the only downfall is the fact that he's got a bit of a Kyle Walker in him. And I'm so glad. Yeah. You know what? We should have had.
Why is that a downfall?
Kyle Walker, man. That guy's, how experienced is he? He does something stupid every time. Like, he's got that loose cannon vibe about him.
Yeah.
So thank you very much, Nick, who was our Matt for tonight. We need to get your spare Spurs shirt just in case. Before we move on, I do like the fact that you mentioned that Burnley do look on their way out. They kind of have the Stoke vibe about them now, where they've had their run in the Premier League and it's about time to dip out. And to Marcus's point in terms of them not having the fans, it just shows the big difference that the fans make for a club like Burnley. But we're going to move on.
But tell me, you tell me now, with the Liverpool sort of, what's the feeling at the moment? You know, it's been 2 weeks since the horrendous, 3 weeks since the horrendous sort of 7-2. Very strange game against Everton. And I've been looking at this one thinking, you need to come back here. And I don't know what's the camp feeling like, Claudio.
You guys did very well to get a draw against Everton, if you ask me, man. That was a very good Everton.
You know what? That was the talk for Tuesday, Mosa, if you were there. We're not gonna.
did very well yesterday to hang on in Amsterdam.
Yeah.
No, man. I think a lot of positives need to come out from the game yesterday. I think. Obviously, it was all doom and gloom after the news with Virgil van Dijk. That's one of the things, unfortunately, when you have one of the, if not the best player in the world at centre half getting injured for the whole season, you are going to start rethinking and ticking the boxes, and there's going to be a bit of a panic from the fans' perspective. But the positives last night was that we do have our second best centre half in the likes of Fabinho. Him and Gomes had a good run out together. It's going to be good to see them build on this relationship. And they also brought on they played two youngsters. They had Curtis Jones come in as a 19-year-old. They also had Rhys Williams, another centre half, who, by the way, I don't even think he had much of a preseason. They were playing other players, and all of a sudden he's in the first team. So he got some game time, which is great for the Champions League. The game in itself, I mean, the conditions weren't the greatest. It was wet. We had a dodgy, it was a super jammy goal, but we'll take it. And one of the best things about the whole game yesterday was that they took off Firmino, Salah, and Mane off at the same time. And they brought on Jota, Minamino, and Shaqiri, who thankfully actually didn't end up leaving in the end. As soon as those three players came on, we had workhorses and they grafted, and we had energy again. And it was a bit of a gamble from Klopp, but at the end of the day, it paid off in a sense that he's now got squad depth. Whereas last season, all we had was Origi. If it wasn't working, we brought on Origi and things didn't get better. It just got... it probably got worse half the time. Nothing against Origi, but
title goal, man. You need to.
He's got the stat for making the most appearances off the bench for Liverpool, by the way, and scoring some goals. So He's almost like he's Liverpool's version of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. So that's all right.
And he does actually score a lot of goals, like from the bench.
He does. Against Barca, he scored in the final.
Yeah, it just doesn't.
Do you think though that, I mean, the tricky one coming from two sort of, you drop points in the last two league games. You kind of needed to get that winning feeling back, no matter how it was. You know. Was a scrappy goal. You got the victory. You know, I think that's going to hold you in good stead going forward. I mean, it's fortunate that you had the European game, because going into your third game against Sheffield United, ideally, more than likely you are going to win the game. But I think that might settle any nerves that anyone possibly had. I don't know if you agree with me.
No,
and a clean sheet is important for Adrian's confidence.
Well, listen, Adrian had one. The classic Adrian, he had one or two moments again last night. There was literally a moment where he clatters. Gomes is trying to usher the ball out, and he comes in flying out of nowhere, and Gomes just pulls his face like, bro, what the hell are you doing? You can see he's lost the rest of the team. Yeah, man. Like,
this guy in the ball team, he just pick it up.
Yeah, dude. And you can see he's definitely lost. He's lost the team. But, you know, thankfully,
but you know what's the most cloudy about that is that even after that, like Adrian didn't see it, he didn't do anything wrong. Like his face was like, okay, I've done the right thing, and he just went back. Like,
yeah, I mean that's the thing that I was about to say is that, you know, thankfully he's one of those goalkeepers where it just doesn't matter what happens to him. He can have the biggest blunder, but he'll come out being like, hey, he's contributed to the team. Like he even had a tweet after the game where he posted a picture of one of the saves that he made. He's like, oh, I love playing in this team and I love the contributions that I make. Like, I made this save. And afterwards, we went to go score and we won the game. I'm like, how's this like? He only sees the glass half full. So that works well for him. But what Nick was asking in terms of the winning confidence and the feeling, getting the feeling back in the camp, I think what is super, super exciting is that, I mean, this is going to be another outrageous statement. So you know me, if I don't say something crazy in the episode, then, you know, it's just not worth shooting. But
can we do a drum roll to this one, please?
Yes, please. Someone give it. Van Dijk getting injured might have been a bit of a blessing in disguise for us.
Oh, that's outrageous. Another outrageous one. That's actually better than...
That's the most outrageous
better than I expected.
That's the most outrageous
piece in the head. Wow. Okay, let me tell you why. Let me tell you why. Is that... Now, all of a sudden, what happened as soon as he got injured? Everyone's like, oh, the title's gone for Liverpool. That's the first thing. Second thing is, now the players, Liverpool and Jurgen Klopp specifically, responds better as an underdog. So the pressure and stuff, now you've got these players that know they don't have this guy at the back, so they're going to have to work a little bit harder than what they were working. So we kind of tape it off towards the end because we were champions. Now we know we don't have the big man at the back. Everyone's going to have to put in an extra 10%. We've got a bit of squad depth. We currently... Looking right now, we've got 7 players out injured for yesterday's game. The likes of Van Dijk, Matip didn't play. We've got Oxlade-Chamberlain, who didn't play. We've got, who is it? Tsimikas wasn't even there. Keita wasn't there. And obviously, Thiago wasn't there. But we've got Thiago coming back on the weekend, hopefully, and Alisson. So as for the Sheffield game, it should be easy work. And I think they'll just pick up where they left off, to be honest. And I think, again, this is actually going to be something that just unifies the team. So that's overall my thinking.
Those are very solid points, but... You can't underestimate the value that Van Dijk has brought to Liverpool at in any degree, because before he was there, Liverpool was a very strong team with very similar players, but they weren't the shop wasn't closed at the back. And it opens that problem up again.
Look, I'm not saying we're going to go run off and score 100 points or 90-something points this season. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying from a team morale perspective, it gives them more. Because remember, everyone was saying beginning of the season, Liverpool, what's their motivation now? They've just had two back-to-back killer seasons. What's the motivation? Now in this situation, they've got someone to play for. They got, you know how strong something like that is for a team. A culture of the team is a unifying factor. And behind that, I mean, you saw how devastated they all were with Jurgen Klopp saying, you know, this is my son. Everyone else saying, this is my brother. So they've got a family member to fight for. And that's all I'm saying. Nick, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, there's an opportunity there for, when you said they played a youngster last night, there's now an opportunity for guys to step up. You know, players are going to get opportunities now. And, you know, Virgil van Dijk is the man. He is Mr. Yeah. Liverpool. He not single-handedly, but he was a big contributor to you guys winning whatever you won. But there's now an opportunity for
whatever that was.
Yeah, whatever that was. I don't know about winning. So I don't even know. But I think, you know, there's an opportunity for guys to kind of prove their worth. And I think Jurgen Klopp will be pounding that into their heads to say, listen, we can't cry over spilt milk, you know.
No.
We are champions. We got to defend what we are crowned with. And at the end of the day, those players need to step up. They're getting paid a salary to and their work is to perform. And they need to work now. And I would see it as an opportunity. You said a 19-year-old played last night. I didn't watch.
Two. So Curtis Jones and the other one is also teenager.
I'd be licking my lips saying, you know, why not? You know, Virgil van Dijk's not coming back for a while. Yeah. I'm assuming it was a centre-back that came in, 19-year-old.
Yeah, 19-year-old. The 19-year-old started Curtis Jones as centre-mid and then the other one was the centre-half, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, I'd be licking my lips, and you know what? You might find your next young up and coming Scouser who's going to be the next captain of Liverpool in the next couple of years. You know, so
well that should be Trent, but yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, you know what I mean, though. I mean, you've got an opportunity to see what's being groomed, you know, and
yeah,
it is going to be a lot more difficult. I think we've established that, but I can understand what you mean. You know, people are going to have to not just be so reliant on the fact that you're going to keep clean sheets because you've got Alisson and Virgil van Dijk. This now, the sort of team ethos and the purpose of a team really comes through when something like this happens.
Yeah, and another case in point you made there was the clean sheet thing. But you got to remember now, there have been 5 games at least that have been played this season, and for any team in the league, keeping a clean sheet's been hard to come by. Even with Van Dijk, we're conceding goals. So I don't think it's going to be – I think traditionally, Mosa was talking about the generations and how things change tactically and everything else. I think with throwing COVID in the mix, throwing no fans in the mix, it obviously has led to a spike in goals and guys maybe having like 15% less concentration when they're playing. So I don't think this league is going to be very reliant on a team that's going to win, who's going to keep clean sheets, but rather a league where it's going to be the team that scores the most goals. So if I'm looking at that and I'm taking that on board as well, and I'm going, well, Liverpool do on paper at least have the best attacking front three in the country. So why wouldn't they still be able to challenge?
Sorry, I was in my throat. Sorry.
Please don't tell me that Martial is going to come up in any conversation.
Yes.
I think the Chiefs fan, I'm sorry, the Chiefs
fan. He's going to tell us about Tomiki about being the best defender in the world.
He's getting anxious.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
I think that's fine. I think let's move on to the man who's choking on the shirt that he's wearing, or choking on, I don't know, Martial. Because if he thinks Martial can compete with the top three, then I'm not too sure. But the big one for the weekend. The Manchester United versus Chelsea. This is the one.
Your statements, man, but it's okay. Let's keep going.
I'm glad Martial isn't around for this one.
It's going to be an interesting game. I haven't seen Chelsea's highlights from the Sevilla game, so I can't obviously comment on why they it was a goalless draw. But I guess also, it is good to keep a clean sheet, even though you didn't score. I mean, that's one positive that you definitely take from the Champions League game. And I think he started out with what we should say is his best back four. And obviously, I think that will give him some confidence going into the game. But also us, we've got some confidence as well, which is good. You know, a win in Paris isn't easy. PSG hasn't lost for, I don't know, like what, last 12 home games or something like that. So we've got some confidence going. Marcus Rashford helping out the kids, 2 goals in 2 games. Yeah, so he's got some confidence. But would have been better if
another one.
DJ Khaled.
Penalty for Man United.
So we'll see how it goes on the weekend. Yeah,
I'm quietly very reserved and very fearful of this outing with Man United. If Rashford plays in any way that he played over the weekend. I'm quietly concerned. I know you guys don't have Martial, which helps me settle my mind. But yeah, it's a difficult game, and like that type of performance against PSG can make Man United believe that they can bring it up against the big six. And yeah, it worries me, but I do also believe in the quality that we have on show. Ziyech came on for the first time. It was 10 minutes, not much to write home about, but still very, very exciting in my view to see him actually fit and ready to play.
Yeah, contribute. I will say this from the Chelsea perspective. I mean, they did have Timo Werner. They had most of their players playing. What did look exciting was that Pulisic was playing behind him. So in those two players, you've got quick players, and now you've actually got someone giving service to Timo Werner, both very direct players. So that was also quite positive for them. And they had Thiago playing. And also, you got to look at the fact that if Mendy plays, I mean, that guy kind of looks like a spider in goals. He's light on his feet, but he's jumping around. It looks good. He pulled off one two good steps. Yeah. But coming back to the United PSG game, I think you kind of brushed over it a bit lightly there, Celo. When we're looking at United and what they actually did on the weekend, there are a couple of positives you've got to pull from that. The fact, not on the weekend, the other day, was that obviously Bruno Fernandes comes in as captain, which is, I think that's already, whether or not he had a spat with Maguire, it's clearly that everyone in the team and in the dressing room, the coach and the club, they know that this man's a leader on and off the pitch. And that's something that you guys have been crying out for in the middle of the park. And then he gets the penalty, he misses the penalty, and then he still then demands to take it again and he scores again. So technically, at that point, he'd missed 2-in-2 penalties and he still decided to pick up the ball. So huge, huge leader there. The other thing is, you've got to ask.
Great game afterwards. He was actually very, very pivotal to Man United's performance on the day as well.
Yeah, definitely, man. And Rashford,
I think we obviously, we've always spoken about the attack, but I was just very impressed with Fred McTominay and the defense. Like Fred, his energy in the second, especially in that second half, the amount of interceptions that he made, McTominay disrupting Neymar and Mbappe, and then Aaron Wan-Bissaka had Mbappe in his pocket. Mbappe literally had to change sides and go to the right hand side to try and go at Luke Shaw. So an excellent first game in about 10 months. He did amazingly well. He also kept, the guys at bay. So I'm quite confident in the fact that the guys showed up. It's just, we just need consistency. That's the most important thing. One thing to show up for PSG, but you need to show up again for Chelsea and then Leipzig and then Arsenal, So you need to show up consistently every single time. And then obviously the attack on its day, we know what Manchester United, the attack can do. They can terrorize any defense. So if there's... defense is good. But one thing that I need to highlight that I think I've been slating Ole with previously is his tactics and his in-game management. Like this game, he had tactics perfectly. Started out with a back three. And then he changed it up with Pogba and went to a back four. And then as soon as Pogba came on, we controlled the midfield a bit more. Got a couple of chances. Pogba created three chances within 23 minutes. So Ole did well. I'm always slating him for his tactics and in-game management, but he was spot on. So let's see
That's where, as a Chelsea fan, I'm kind of hoping he messes up. I hope he gets his tactics instrumentally wrong, where he kind of like Man United do have a quality arsenal to put together at in the front six, but sometimes they don't put it together for some God knows reason, and that's what I'm hoping for. In all honesty, that we might not have our front six set in stone, but if you guys also mess that up, it'll be I think our front six will be a little bit more expressive if they can come on.
Yeah, but they both arguably at a different phrase. Like if you're looking at Chelsea, all this beautiful puzzle that you've seen in the store and you bought it and it was like a 1,000 piece puzzle and you're like, oh yes, this is beautiful. I want to buy it and I can work on this thing. But as soon as you take all the puzzle pieces, you're not sure where to put them all to finish the puzzle. And that's kind of where they're at the moment. And that's what Frank is dealing with. So when Kevin says Ole has Frank's number, you could also argue that maybe Ole is better or he knows how to manage a bigger game because that's where his strength lies. He does well when the team like a PSG has to come at a United and they can catch him on the counter. Like it genuinely looked like Rashford was on the N1 on Tuesday. So it was one of those. And I think he got rewarded in the end because he's also given the time and space. Very different dynamic. A PSG Neymar and the goal that he scored wasn't even watching the game. He was running, walking back to the center half. He wasn't even attempting to close him down. Whereas I do think that dynamic is going to be very different when Chelsea take them on, largely because they are more organized. And if Lampard sees any player walking, they're going to be in trouble.
And they've got a lot of pace. They've got a lot of pace up front. I'd be happy to see a Maguire back there again. Please put him back on, guys. Give him the armband. Give him everything you need to give him to put him back on.
He used to make his hamstrings still a bit tight, man.
I wouldn't be surprised. We had someone who asked the question on Twitter, and he said, "Do we think we're going to see a back three centre halves with United when they take on Chelsea with Axel, Shaw, and Maguire?" Celo, what are your thoughts centered around that?
Hey, man, I feel you must reward the guys that played very well against PSG. You know, it's not easy to mark Di Maria, Neymar, and Mbappe. And keep them to no goal basically because there was an own goal. So I feel if he goes for a back three, keep the same back three. But if he goes for a back four, then rather play Axel and Lindelof together because you must just reward the players that did well. You know, reward McTominay, Fred, everyone who played in that game, who started, except for obviously Martial, who is suspended. Then start everyone else and then tweak a couple of things. You know, maybe. Depending on who he decides with Telles and Shaw at left back, but yeah, I don't see any reason to be bringing back Maguire yet. And also, if he does have an injury, he's not 100%. Rather bring him back. Rather play Maguire against Arsenal or
against whoever, next season
or whoever we play against after Arsenal. You know, what I mean?
I will say, like I'm in agreement. What do you say, Wonga?
No, I'm saying Arsenal, Aubameyang will ravage him. Ketty will ravage him. Not Aubameyang.
This is what I'm saying. If Maguire does play on the weekend, having three centre-backs... it's going to be great for you guys. But I think having three centre-backs then to try and counter-defend in a way the pace in a Pulisic and a Timo Werner does make sense because then he helps out. He gets helped out by the likes of Shaw and Axel. I think when you're looking at Liverpool, you also got to say when Liverpool play a high line, the reason they played a high line was because they had Van Dijk, right? That's why they got away with it because he's quick. He could read the game well. So they actually gambled. A lot of the time, they were just defending with two guys on the halfway line playing with their fullbacks. In this case, without Van Dijk, you've already seen a change in tactic. Yesterday, they were playing a lot deeper. So they were waiting for one or two things to happen. So that's already – and that was somewhat beneficial for Liverpool because they could catch him on the counter. So if I'm looking at Manchester United approaching the game in a similar fashion, to me, that makes all the sense in the world. Park it at the back there. Have three guys. Maguire can organize somewhat. Have assistance with pace with the guys around him and then wait for the counter.
I don't know.
If they give Maguire a chance, the floodgates will open because he will be able to turn them so quick. He'll be a player that's trying to, you know, express himself, get on the ball a lot, try and be influential in the game. Whereas against a team with so much firepower and so much pace, Maguire would be perfect. He'd be the guy that's the chink in Man United's armor that we could kind of find a way in there. Whereas Wan-Bissaka, it's very difficult, especially when he's tracking back. His slide tackles, his timing when he's going back is very, very good. I don't know when you're going to see him actually miss out on a couple of those chances. And cause penalties and cause free kicks and cause a lot of havoc in those areas. But like Maguire would be an easier target if you look at it that way. It'd be the place that a Werner would go, a Havertz would go. I'd even put a Ziyech because then you wouldn't need – you just need more activity around there to keep him on his toes and keep him faulty. Keep him as faulty as he's been over the past season. So – That's what I'd be hoping for as a Chelsea fan from this. I am happy that Martial isn't playing as well because it does take away a lot more to think about in the front attacking force.
And historically, he likes to score against Chelsea.
Yeah,
I'll be honest, guys. I've never been on the Martial bandwagon. I think he's got moments. I definitely think I tell you, I don't like those sort of players. I think he's got the moments, but I mean, take case in point, for example, against PSG. What kind of professional player goes up for a header and closes his eyes? Explain that to me. Just explain that.
I've seen Cristiano Ronaldo also close his eyes once.
People do that as well, man. I've seen Pogba block his face while it was a free kick and was a penalty. You know what I mean? Who puts his hand in front of his face? You know what I mean?
United players.
Okay. And this guy's a so I've seen a lot of dubious things.
I've seen dubious things from
other players as well.
I think he epitomizes what United are going through at the moment, or have been going through over the last couple of years. This player with so much potential, all the threat, that shows up when he feels like it. And for me, that's not good enough, personally. If I had someone like that, I would flog them. I'd say, this isn't working for me. I wouldn't even give him time to blossom. Like, for example, if he feels like he's not doing well, he'll just disappear, and then you got to take him off. As opposed to Rashford, for example. Take Rashford into consideration.
So last season he didn't feel like playing.
Towards the end he did, all right. When the whole team started playing well, but
before that, don't forget he scored 23 goals in all competitions, right? And he had 11 assists, right? So that means he contributed 34 goals, and he was carrying the team when Rashford got injured before lockdown. So before lockdown there was no Rashford, right?
Was this pre or post Fernandes signing?
This was
pre and post.
Yeah, he scored. This is pre and post. You know what I mean? After lockdown, right? I think he scored. He was the third leading goal scorer in the Premier League after Antonio and I don't know who was second. Whatever. He scored, I think, like six goals after lockdown, and like Antonio scored like seven or eight, whatever. You know what I mean? But that's 6 goals out of his 23. So where was his other 17 goals, Claudio, in the season? You know what I mean? Obviously, I think you don't watch Man United as much. And that's all good and well, because it's similarly to Mourinho, right?
Football isn't great.
You'll tell me about Mourinho and where we obviously split in terms of opinions about Firmino. You know what I mean? I've seen lots of Liverpool fans.
Whoa, Cillo. No, this isn't. We're not going down this path again. I'm not saying that.
But look at my opponent this weekend. He's saying that he's happy that Martial's not there because he knows what Martial can do. You know what I mean? Because Martial is a direct runner, and Martial is more clinical than Rashford. Rashford needs more opportunities.
What I'm saying is
many opportunities.
He's not as good as Andy Carroll.
He's not as good as Andy Carroll, bro.
Martial will show up. I'm not talking about showing up for a big game. We know he will. And for me, that's the issue. Like, he shows up for the big games, fine. But what I also want to talk about is that you've got another player who scored 17 goals last season, 19-year-old, Mason Greenwood. He wasn't in the squad on the week on Tuesday. He wasn't in the squad on the weekend. There have been rumors coming out of the club in terms of him having a disciplinary issue, and they're trying to nip that in the bud. If we go back to the England situation, having girls in the room and whatever, him being late for training, all these things, for me, personally, if I've got to compare the two players, that's a player I'm more excited about, because if they get it right and they mold him, then he becomes a superstar. So what is happening at the moment?
Obviously an up-and-coming player. You don't want to burden him with too much responsibility. You know what I mean? You don't want to overrun him. He's only turning 18 or just turned 18. So obviously the reports of him coming late for practice is not good. I think he needs to watch himself. I think, you know, previously he's been, you know, sheltered, you know, by his father, by Solskjaer, but just recently he's obviously, I don't know, man, it's not the way he should be behaving, especially with the talents that he has. You know what I mean? He's shown that he's one of the best under 18s in the world. And he needs to just watch himself. And I think the players in Man United, the senior players, need to make sure that they just, you know, guide him in the right direction. I think Rashford needs to help him out a bit. You know, he's come through the same form of pathway at United. He just needs to guide him and say, hey, listen, man, You've got all the talents to become the best player in the world. Just, you know, focus on football. And I understand that you wanna be cool or whatever, but that's not the way to be cool, you know.
Will Cavani be available?
Yeah, he trained. He's been training, so he felt himself he wasn't fit enough to go to PSG. So I think he will be available definitely. He should be in the squad. So I think he'll definitely be available. I think maybe let's rather bring him off the bench. If need be in the second half. Hopefully, it's all wrapped up by that time.
Don't be wrapped up by that time. If you're going to play at Chelsea, don't, even if you score 2-0 up ahead at halftime, it won't be wrapped up. That's the power of that the front six is going to be menacing.
Yeah, no, I know your front six opportunities. No, you don't.
Yeah, but like it won't be wrapped up at all.
I think you need to ask these guys their prediction, Claudio.
Yes. I think this is the final segment of the show, guys. We have gotten there. We're going to make the predictions. We're going to save the Chelsea and the Manchester United. I almost said the Chelsea and Chiefs game. Sorry. The Chelsea and United game for last, because I need to give these guys some time to think about it. So let's start off with the Wolves-Newcastle game, Nick, seeing as you brought it up. What do you think the final – what is your – let's actually call this the betting corner, rather. So if you guys are going to place bets, listen to the gentleman with their knowledge and see if you're brave enough to make a bet. We've got a couple of bets that predictions that have come to fruition. Celo had one last week. I had the one previous week. And I'm talking in the big games, the ones where the money's at, not the smaller games.
I'm going with a 2-2 draw. We don't keep clean sheets, but we do score. We've got goals in Callum Wilson. And Wolves are due a little slip up. So yeah, I'm gonna go the 2-2 draw. And I think that'll be a good result for us away from home.
Cool. Mossa?
You know, I was actually gunning for like a Newcastle to put something, but the points that Nick made earlier are actually relevant. The team's consistency is tough. The management is going through a lot of pressure from the fans. So I think a draw would be fair. I think it could be 1-1 for this one.
Celo?
2-1 to Wolves, man. Raul Jimenez with a goal. The other one will be from the wing, one of the wingers, or actually maybe like a centre back, actually like a Ruben Saiz or someone, the header in the box. Sorry, Nick, man, 2-1, man.
That's all right.
Wonga.
I'm with Celo as well. I don't know the goal scorers, but I think it will be a 2-1 win.
Nice. I'm going to round that off. I actually think it's going to be a 3-1 win to Wolves. To Nick's point, there is a goal in Newcastle, which is why I think they'll score. But I think Wolves are going to have a fun day on the weekend. The next game, Burnley versus Spurs.
I think it's a straightforward 3-0 win for Spurs. 3-0.
I agree 100%.
I also said 3-0. Nice one. Wonga, you're the only one. What do you think is going to happen here?
I think if Bale has started today, that's a good game. Get confidence. I honestly think I'm going to see five Burnley up
now. Five.
Tottenham are
five. No. Jeepers. So, guys, if you're playing your fantasy team, listen to Wonga. You want to get some Spurs players in there if they're going to score five goals against Burnley.
Definitely get Son.
Son and Kane.
You gotta sell somebody.
It could be. It could be a 5-1 because there's no clean sheets now. 5-1.
Oh, 1. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So Wonga, you know Wonga, guys. He's never decisive with his decisions. He likes going back and forth, but he's settled on 5-1. Liverpool, Sheffield, Nick.
I'm going for a 3-1 victory for Liverpool. I think it'll be very comfortable. I just see you maybe conceding. I think Adrian worries me at the back a little bit, but I think straightforward, back to business, 3 points in the bag, 3-1 win for Liverpool.
Yeah, I think they'll probably figure out the back four with Fabiano and Gomez. They're probably traveling today and figuring out how they're going to work it out. But I think they'll probably have to keep a clean sheet to build confidence. Alisson might be back. which will help. So I'm thinking 3-0 to Liverpool.
Yeah,
I think 2-0.
How much? 3-0.
2-0. 2-0. Yeah.
You don't think Firmino is going to get a goal on the weekend?
I think Mohamed Salah will get a goal. That's you can put some money on this weekend. Mohamed Salah to get a goal.
So captain for fantasy, yes or no?
No, I don't know. I don't know if he's going to create an assist. I think Son, guys, if you want to captain anyone in fantasy, you got to captain Kane on Son, man.
Well, according to Wonga's prediction, one goal, one assist.
That's what they do. Minimum one goal, one assist a game. So those are the people you captain. Salah will score them.
How's your fantasy league team looking?
Who are you talking to? Celo.
Celo, since he's giving out predictions.
Mine is rubbish, man. It's rubbish fantasy, actually. Yeah.
So please, everybody, don't take what he said seriously. Ignore everything he said. If you look at the bottom, you have the top six. You're at your own risk. It's a full disclosure. We have the top six in our Goal Lounge Fantasy League. These at the bottom. That's actually what's showing at the bottom is our top six. What am I saying? Top six leaders. Sorry, Wonga. What is your prediction of the Liverpool Sheffield game?
4-1
to Liverpool. I actually reckon 4-2. I say 4-2 to Liverpool. They're going to be goals. I think Sheffield, if Ryan Brewster gets to play, I think they might have a goal in them. Arsenal, Leicester. Nick?
I think Arsenal will get their victory that I thought they would get last week. Leicester looked a little bit shaky against Villa. When was it? On Sunday. Yeah. I don't know. Without Vardy, they don't look as sort of as natural in terms of going forward. And I don't see the sort of goals in there. He might be back and he'll always be a threat. But I think Arsenal 2-0 win, I think, is on the cards for them. And they look solid at the back, Arsenal. So I'm going to give them a 2-0 win.
I think Arsenal are going to lose 2-0. They don't have the outlet of Aubameyang, and they don't have like too much firepower on the front, so that's going to hamper the effects harshly. And you know, like Leicester do come up for these big games and do want to express themselves fully. So yeah, I think 2-0 to Leicester.
Hey man, Aubameyang scored tonight, so he's back, man.
He's back. Hey, oh, he's okay, that changes. And he scored.
Yeah, him and David Luiz scored.
2-1.
It's 2-1 to Arsenal in the 88th minute. So David Luiz and Aubameyang.
Okay. Nice. Okay, if he's back then, yeah, it could change the story. 2-1 still. I think Leicester will try and bulldoze the game. It's kind of awkward seeing that, but like I feel like they've built themselves into that top six position where they can actually try and throw their muscle into a game.
I think it'll be 2-1 to Arsenal. I think the fact that Soyuncu is out at the back for Leicester, they haven't since the City game, they've dropped off, which was surprising because we all expected them to to be in the top three or currently, but then they've obviously lost the last two games against Villa and West Ham, which aren't okay. Villa's obviously been hot, but like West Ham's not the hottest team the league this season. So I think 2-1 to Arsenal.
Yeah, I'm saying 3-1 to Arsenal.
There's
a victim there. Yes, man, Wonga, it's about time there.
Yeah, I'm going to just echo what you guys are saying. The defense, we look sharp. David Luiz as well is looking like, I don't know what it is, but maybe he's somehow got his head a bit level. Not making erratic decisions. But yeah, I say 3-1 to Arsenal.
3-1 to Arsenal. I'm going to go with a 2-2 draw. I think they're both going to walk away with the points. I know Rodgers knows how to upset a party. So yeah, that's what I'm leaning towards. Next game we're going to talk about, we haven't spoken much about it, but the prediction we're going to give rather is going to be the West Ham Man City game, largely because, they're fighting for the title and West Ham did just come back from a miraculous 3-3 comeback. So Nick, take us away.
I think this will be straightforward for Man City. I think Pep needs to start getting a sort of run going, yeah, especially with the inconsistent start for most teams. I think if anyone can get a good sort of run and establish himself in that top three, top four, it will go a long way. So I think they'll win 2-0. I think it will be comfortable for them.
Yeah, I don't think Pep will have to change too much to get a result from this game. They traveled well for the game now in Champions League, and they looked the part. So I think they should get a 2-0 victory from it.
I say 3-1. I think West Ham will be have some confidence, but just not enough confidence. So the confidence will just get them a goal. But yeah, City 3-1.
Look, if Aguero's back and they're playing Mahrez, they're not changing much. I say 3-0 straight. Could even get 4. Against Arsenal, they looked pretty decent. I don't know. They just look like. Let's say if they could keep the form, they're winning 3-4 now, I would say. Yeah.
I think Wonga's showing his true colours tonight. I think he's revealing to the public that he's quite a betting man. He likes the big, bold statements now. He was shy. He's finally come out of his shell.
Yeah, I think he's bets.
I reckon, you know, like I'm also a betting man, so I think you guys know where I'm leaning towards this. I reckon David Moyes to spoil the milk and give Pep Guardiola a glass of sour milk. So I think, you know, 2-1 to West Ham, because you know my boy Antonio, if he plays, if he has a good game.
The guy that's possible. Better than Messi and Cristiano.
I didn't say he was better. I did not say this. I love how the words get twisted. I said on his day, he's as effective.
Yes.
These are Nick. Listen to how this guy's first words.
You shocked my ass, sir. You shocked my ass.
I said on his day he is as effective in those players as he is for West Ham for their sides. Wow. Anyway, point is last prediction, Man United Chelsea. Nick.
I see goals. I see lots of goals. I see a Man United team that is very vulnerable. I see a Chelsea team that looks good, but also very vulnerable. But I think the home ground advantage is going to play its part. I think it's a 3-2 win for Chelsea. That's it.
we're at Old Trafford, man, sir.
Is it at Old Trafford?
It is. Yeah, that's why I found Trafford, that quite interesting. Really? But yeah.
But it's fine because the Champions League game I think was at Chelsea, and from my side it's good that you had a goalless result against Sevilla. Very well organized team, very good team that can actually produce the goods on any occasion. I think it's very beneficial that Man United will be missing Martial. I hope that we can express ourselves with having I wouldn't be saddened by the idea of having a ZH and Havertz on the field together, because I feel like if we put Man United on the back foot, their defense is the toughest part to break down, or not the toughest, but the easiest part to break down. Whereas if we were to try and play them out the field in the midfield and in the striking department, it would be difficult. So I'd give that 3-2 to us as well. I think it will be a high scoring game. Both defenses are trying to get to know each other. Man United have the same problems that we have. You're gonna have a defense which is, if Maguire isn't back, it's a defense which is trying to get to know each other and trying to get to figure out the best formation at the moment. We have conceded a lot of goals, and I think that will continue over the weekend with guys trying to express himself. So 3-2 to Chelsea, in my view.
I'm thinking 2-1 to Man United. I just think that Chelsea. They don't have it figured out at the back. They've conceded a goal pretty much in every single game.
Except for the last one.
In the league. So I think we also don't have it figured out at the back. But I just feel that we've got a bit more going for us in terms of our midfield is the options in our centre mid are much better than Chelsea's one. Where Chelsea does edge it a bit is the attack, because obviously we don't have Martial available and if Greenwood will be playing. But yeah, I think we'll just edge it 2-1.
Yeah, I think I share the same sentiments as Celo.
I thought you were choking on his prediction. I wasn't sure.
So, yeah, that deserves a choke. I can't believe you went that way, bro.
Yeah, I was thinking about it, but you do think about it. Chelsea, their players, they interest you. It looks like a good hot team, but I just don't know. I mean, watching Man United on the, yesterday
PSG game.
With the PSG game, it was you'd feel that. I mean, they with their team, they've been together longer. They should win it. I mean, Rashford as well. Up front, but yeah, the game could swing anyway. But for the sake of the prediction, I would say Man United 2-1 plus a penalty that they'll get, so 3-1.
Kevin is a Chelsea supporter, by the way. So for the fact that he's saying that it's 3-1 to United, says a lot about how not confident he is in his own team.
I understand where it's coming from, man. Like, it's such a difficult place for Chelsea at the moment. Like, you guys did look very impressive against a good PSG team as well. And yeah, man, we can only offer very good European players at this point in time. And if you guys can contain PSG in that same manner, I think you could do something against us, which is scary part.
Yeah, well, especially if Mount starts, I know Kevin is going to switch off the TV.
I want to ease his worries, because it seems to me he's focusing on, he's being fearful and looking at the glass a bit half empty. For me, I see the game ending, and I'd written this down before, so I like the fact that you guys all went with this as well. I think the game is ending 3-2 to Chelsea, despite the fact that Ferguson is this in the stands, because let's be honest, that's going to be the only home ground advantage. And I think Mason Mount is going to score the final goal. And I can see the headlines now. Ole's pressure Mount. so that's how I'm ending it. Guys, thanks for watching. Yeah, I'm ending it. Thanks for watching, everybody. Don't forget to like. Don't forget to subscribe. We enjoy Kevin.
We need to find a new host.
We need to find someone who's going to wear his United jersey and not his Amakosi jersey. That's what we need to do.
Especially after getting back into UEFA Champions League. Well done and welcome, by the way. It's been a while.
We need to find a new host, guys.
That's how we're going to end. I just want to say thanks again to everyone for tuning in. We'll catch you again on Tuesday for the second episode of, guys, can you say it?
The cool down. Yeah.
You're gonna be ice cold. This cool down.
It's cold as ice. Nice.
Blue ice.
Thank you very much.
Cheers.